Thank you, Blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, January 11th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. A ZANU-PF member of parliament has appeared in court facing rape charges in a landmark private prosecution case.
This is the first time we are having a private prosecution going beyond the stages that we have seen today. We have never had a private prosecution in this country.
Many Zimbabweans say they are failing to raise money to send children to schools which open tomorrow.
It's very difficult because we don't have money. The companies are not paying, even the government is not paying.
And some Zimbabweans say no dramatic shift is expected on Washington-Harare relations with the coming in of Ambassador-designate Harry Thomas Jr.
The new ambassador will obviously carry on with the agenda that has been set by his predecessors. And there's no other way of looking at the agenda except in terms of what American foreign policy clearly says.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. The landmark trial of Bigita West Member of Parliament Munyaradzi Kereke opened in the Harare Magistrate Court today, with the legislator denying two charges of indecent assault and rape. Kereke denied the charges when he appeared before Magistrate Noel Mupeiwa. Prosecutors allege that sometime in March 2010, he fondled the breasts of his niece, who was 15, and also raped the girl's younger sister, aged 11, 3 months later. The incidents allegedly happened at Kereke's home in Mount Pleasant, Harare. This becomes the first high-profile private prosecution case in the history of the country. The private prosecution of Kereke was made possible after the Constitutional Court slapped Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana with a wholly suspended 30-day sentence on condition that he issues certificates for private prosecution. Tomana had defied rulings of the High Court and the Supreme Court compelling him to issue the certificates. Kereke was represented by his lawyers James Magia and Nathaniel Chigoro. Charles Warara is the private prosecutor. Kereke argued that the complainants took too long to report because they were being used by politicians to craft a case against him. However, when the girl was led by Warara and cross-examined by Makia, she told the court that she is not related to any politician, nor does she know one, adding that she doesn't even understand politics. The trial continues Tuesday, and seven more witnesses will testify against the legislator. Law professor and leader of the opposition National Constitutional Party, Love Momadugu, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu the trial is a significant chapter in the country's legal history.
This is the first time we are having a private prosecution going beyond the stages that we have seen today. We have never had a private prosecution in this country. At any one stage of our legal history, we have had people trying to do private prosecution, but some are stopping at some stage of being unable to proceed, either because the person being prosecuted was able to raise some defenses that stopped the prosecution, or the person trying to prosecute gave up. This is the first time to see what has happened today. It's never happened in the history of the country.
But will it open floodgates because there are a number of cases where the prosecutor general has refused to prosecute?
It will not open floodgates for one reason. That reason is that the government is actually working quite fast to stop and close all the loopholes that allowed the current prosecution sector. What the government wants is a situation where prosecutions are the prerogative of the state, and they are going to be closing the room for private prosecutions. So we shouldn't be expecting such that. I am expecting that in the next few months, we will have a new law that will make it very almost impossible for a private prosecution to take place.
But what would that mean when it comes to the rule of law?
Well, I think in the rule of law, generally, we should also know that prosecutions must generally be by the state, not by a private individual. So what it means for the rule of law is to make the state more accountable. We must not have these situations where the prosecutor general refuses to prosecute for nothing. People must still push and find remedies for the prosecutor general to be forced to prosecute.
That was constitutional law professor and leader of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly, Lovemore Maduku, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Many Zimbabweans in the eastern border city of Mutare, Manicaland province, say they are struggling to send children to school due to lack of money. Most schools are demanding cash upfront before enrolling children for the 2016 school's first term. Our correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the story.
While it looked like business as usual in this city on the last day before schools opened, dejection was evidently written on most parents' faces. Most of them were doing window shopping but complained of high prices of uniforms for both primary and secondary schools. On average, a primary school uniform for girls costs about $25 and a boy's uniform is pegged at $20. School shoes are about $15. School fees at government primary schools are about $180 for starters, and retainees pay about $80 a term. Government and church-run secondary schools charge about $90 a term for day scholars, and boarders pay an average of $450 a term. One of the parents, Maxo Matiashe, said they are failing to raise money to buy uniforms and pay school fees for their children.
It's very difficult because we don't have money. The companies are not paying, even the government is not paying. So what we are thinking is if the government can actually allow us to pay later, it's better so that the students are not chased away from school.
Alice Baskito ekes out a living through selling carrier bags at local departmental stores in the city, said it is hard to look for money, especially when state workers are not being properly paid by the government.
Our business is so hard because we don't have money. We don't have money for buying uniforms for children to go to school. We don't have school fees. We don't have money. People are not giving money for civil servants. Things are too hard.
Another local woman, Marvelous Munyeroke, who is a street vendor, said she can only send her children to school if she gets a decent job.
Selling saga big, but I don't want to sell saga big. I want to find these jobs because I want more money to pay school fees, to buy food, to buy uniforms.
A government employee who identified himself as Abel Charuma said he will be able to send his children to school if he gets his delayed 2015 bonus.
We don't know the twins are saying school because Atina, like, we didn't get money. We are doing civil servant. We never get bonuses and we never got bonuses. Our children are going to school and we are no way to 21 up in marriage when the government just treated us like that.
A headmaster at a local secondary school told Studio 7 that while the government has directed that no child should be sent away from school for non-payment of school fees, most school authorities will not follow the order. The headmaster said it would be improper for those that have not paid fees to enjoy the same education rights with the children that would have paid their fees, be it in part or in full. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
Some Zimbabweans say no dramatic shift is expected on Washington-Harare relations with the coming in of ambassador-designate Mr. Harry Thomas Jr. as a new U.S. envoy to the Southern African nation. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
U.S. foreign policy is determined by Congress, the White House, and relevant legislation, and no fundamental political and economic changes have taken place since President Robert Mugabe won the presidential poll in 2013 at the heart of a standoff with Washington over human rights violations, bad economic policies, and alleged electoral fraud. Most Zimbabweans believe that ambassador-designate Mr. Thomas Jr. is widely expected to continue with the same U.S. policies that were being implemented by outgoing Ambassador Mr. Bruce Wharton. The Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001, or ZIDERA, which enforces targeted sanctions imposed on President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle, is still intact with no indications that it will be repealed anytime soon. Under this law, President Mugabe, his wife, Grace, several top ZANPF officials and senior members of the armed forces, mostly comprising the Joint Operations Command, are not allowed to conduct any business with the United States citizens and companies. America has over the years accused President Mugabe and his colleagues of serious human rights violations and electoral fraud. Mr. Mugabe has dismissed the sanctions, saying they were imposed in retaliation to the government's moves to forcibly take over fertile land from white commercial farmers. More than 3,000 white commercial farmers have been displaced from their land following the introduction of the land reforms in 2000. Economic commentator Masimbai Manyanya tells VOA Studio 7 the ambassador-designate is well acquainted with Zimbabwe after working in the country where he served as labor and political officer from 1989 to 1992. Manyanya said Mr. Thomas Jr. will no doubt continue with America's policy of rectifying many faults in governance issues and ensure the creation of a democratic state in Zimbabwe.
The new ambassador will obviously carry on with the agenda that has been set by his predecessors. And there's no other way of looking at the agenda except in terms of what American foreign policy clearly says, to pursue democratization and to ensure that there's transparency in governance systems and to ensure that there's protection of the law, the rule of the law, and that that people participate in governance.
Harare resident Jeffrey Moyo agrees with Manyanya, saying there is no way Washington can have a policy shift given the current social, economic, and political situation in Zimbabwe.
The incoming of the new U.S. ambassador won't change anything in Zimbabwe. Their position has always been the same. They seem to be indirectly maintaining the sanctions.
Clarice Maduku, a political commentator and director of the Platform for Youth Development, echoes the same sentiments, adding that he does not see the new ambassador changing anything except to continue efforts to normalize relations between the two nations, which Mr. Wharton has been pushing for the time he started work as the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe.
When I read part of his statement when he was actually being appointed, actually seemed to be appreciating the services of Mr. Wharton. And in that case, for me, I read that he's clearly someone who admires Wharton, so he will do exactly what we have known Wharton for.
Manyanya, Moyo and Maduku agree that America put tough restrictive measures on the ruling elite in an attempt to force Harare to respect the rights of local people and hold free and fair elections, but all that has come to nothing. Manyanya argues that while laws like ZITERA have allegedly hurt Zimbabweans in many ways, the U.S. has been ready to repeal it, but there was a lot of intransigence and stubbornness by Mr. Mugabe and his colleagues in implementing the necessary reforms.
We are part of an international grouping of nations, and we have to abide by certain norms and values and rules that govern the general progress of society. And it's not about creating enemies or trying to make other people suffer, but I think it's about engineering progress towards the general progress of society, which is in the interests of Zimbabweans.
Another Harare resident, Henry Shoko, says Zimbabwe should introduce democratic reforms in order to promote good relations with the USA and all Western nations. According to the U.S. State Department of Commerce, Zimbabwe was the United States' 142nd largest supplier of goods imports in 2012, and the U.S. goods trade surplus with Zimbabwe was 1 million in the same year, 89.9% less than in 2011. Trade between the two nations appears to have been maintained over the years despite targeted sanctions imposed on Mr. Mugabe and his close associates, numbering less than 200. Shoko says the dominance of the U.S. dollar among a cocktail of multiple currencies being used in Zimbabwe, including the Chinese yuan, is a clear indication that Washington is key to Zimbabwe's existence. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo could not be reached for comment, but ZANU-PF activist Gulson Nguni said the incoming ambassador won't change anything as U.S. foreign policy was determined in Washington. Another ZANU-PF activist, Spencer Akabopa, concurs, adding the new ambassador was coming to defend American sanctions against Zimbabwe.
The issue about the coming in of a new ambassador to Zimbabwe, to me, doesn't mean anything and nothing is going to change. You know what? This has been happening. We know a lot of ambassadors came and people expected a lot of things, but nothing happened. We know that America will just maintain its stance even on sanctions.
When Mr. Thomas Jr. was appointed a month ago, he noted that America would always attempt to open dialogue with Zimbabwe. Indications are that he will push for the full implementation of the 2013 Constitution, credible, lasting democratic reforms, and respect for human rights and rule of law by the government of Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
We are conducting a poll on our website on our expectations for 2016. Register your vote on www.voazimbabwe.com. Don't be left out. Cast your vote now at www.voazimbabwe.com.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, a SADC consultant says the HIV stigma is slowly fading away in Zimbabwe.
Stigma is one of the causes of the increasing rate of HIV. Where there's stigma, people get more and more infected and they don't seek treatment.
And Zimbabweans mourn the death of the late American-based soccer player Abel Sebele. Stay tuned. But first, a look at regional and international news. South African Paralympic champion Oscar Pistorius has appealed to the country's constitutional court in a last-ditch attempt to overturn his murder conviction for killing his girlfriend in 2013. British rock music legend David Bowie has died. On Friday, the iconic musician turned 69 and released Black Star, his 25th album. And the Playboy Mansion is up for sale. If you're interested, all you need is only $200 million for the Hornby Hills Estate in California, built in 1927. Today, in our health segment, the virus that causes AIDS, HIV, is no longer the life-threatening medical condition it once was when it was first discovered more than 30 years ago. However, despite it now being termed a chronic but treatable disease, enabling many with it to live long, healthy lives, fear of stigma still prevents many from exposing their status for going for testing. Health experts warn that stigma could defeat efforts to end the spread of the disease. Elopis Banda, an HIV/AIDS consultant with the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that prominent figures speaking about their HIV status could help end the stigma.
Stigma came at a time when HIV was not treatable, where it was very difficult to manage it, and where people were associating HIV infection with almost the loss of life. I think we've made a lot of gains in that now HIV is now really treated as a chronic disease, which will last for many, many years. So the question of how to deal with the stigma is really to increase the gospel, if you like, of how well we are now able to manage this condition. So that is no longer a thing to be hidden under the shelf. And it will take time because we have generations that were exposed to the older phase of HIV and to the newer generations, we just have to get the good news to spread.
We still remember that some parliamentarians at one stage actually went out to show that they were HIV negative and so forth, you know, after getting tested. But some people still believe that when you're HIV positive, you've got a problem. Maybe you're promiscuous or something like that. What do you think about that?
I think the example by parliamentarians was actually excellent. And they were trying to face up with the fact that stigma is one of the causes of the increasing rate of HIV. Where there's stigma, people get more and more infected and they don't seek treatment. So the example of parliamentarians was good. But what needs to be done is not a one-off, but a continuous process which is led by the lead community leaders like parliamentarians, but as well as by church leaders, if the church leaders can also give a word and help to spread the good word that this is a condition that is manageable and that we as Zimbabwe now are quite cautiously optimistic that by 2030 we might reach a goal of no more new cases. So there's a lot of good news to be said, and I think that has to be spread better, and we have to organize ourselves in a better way to communicate the fact that we can control this condition, and if it's picked up early, the control is better.
What will happen if, let's say, prominent people like soccer players actually come out and tell the public about their status? Will that change maybe for the better?
It should. It should be able to change for the better, but it's a process. It's a mental process where people who are HIV positive will be able to tell everybody else. And they may, as individuals, want to discuss that, but maybe they have to consult the families and so on. It takes a long process sometimes. But if that can be achieved by prominent people, politicians included, business people, all those people that are thought to be community leaders and role models, then that should be very beneficial to stopping the issue of stigma.
Now, Professor Spanda, why do you think that people with HIV are still shunned in Zimbabwe?
I actually do not think they are shunned. I think that there is a perception which is born out of the stigma that if I tell people, they will think about me as something or as somebody who is, as you are putting it, who has been behaving in a way which are less acceptable than others. So generally, we still have some way to go, but there's a lot of improvement in the understanding of the condition, and in particular in the understanding that this is a lifelong condition that can be controlled very effectively. It doesn't affect their work, their career choices. It doesn't even affect whether they will or will not have babies. I think within 5 or so years, everybody should be able to be talking about it without any problem.
Any justification for that?
I think it's because we are more and more aware. We have a major campaign by the WHO, the 1990 campaign. We'll be testing and treating people as soon as they are diagnosed. And that way, we will reach out many more people. And then that awareness becomes shared by the community. And we should be able to minimize the stigma within that time frame, based on the interventions that the WHO is promoting and that the government of Zimbabwe has embraced.
That was Dr. Elopis Banda, an HIV AIDS consultant with the Southern African Development Community. He spoke there with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare. The Zimbabwe National Agreement Platform, or ZINAP, a grouping of political parties, the civic movement and the church, today condemned the government's failure to address the country's economic and political situation. Bishop Anselmo Magaya, the convener of ZINAP, addressed a press conference in Harare today, saying the government should ensure that civil servants are paid on time. We reached Magaya for more details on the press conference and why he thinks it will force the government to act.
Yes, you remember we did launch the Zimbabwe National Agreement Platform on the 18th of December, and we felt that this was a very important process, because having launched that, people were closing down for holidays. You know, ever since people came back for the year, things have not been easier, things have gone even more difficult. And so this press conference was to just call upon the government to make sure that, number one, they deal with civil servants' salaries timelessly. because if that does not happen, that is likely to cause unrest, but also that they are able to address issues relating to municipal police in terms of the manner in which they respond to vendors, but also most importantly to urge the government to convene an urgent national dialogue with various stakeholders.
Do you think that the press conference will be able to achieve anything if you don't engage the government directly?
You see, a press conference don't normally work in isolation. There are other processes that are happening.
That was convener of the Zimbabwe National Agreement Platform, Anselmo Magaya. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The recent terrorist attacks across the globe are a reminder that the threat of terrorism has not receded. It has reconstituted and remains grave. The U.S. is committed to using force to protect its citizens and allies and is intensifying the campaign to degrade and ultimately defeat ISIL with new strikes against their leaders, oil fields, and territory. At the same time, said Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights Sarah Sewell, we must remember that no number of airstrikes, soldiers, or spies can eliminate the complex motives and hateful ideologies that feed terrorism. That is why the U.S. is embracing a broader and more holistic approach to this threat called Countering Violent Extremism, or CVE. CVE calls for addressing the underlying factors that make communities vulnerable to the siren call of violent extremism. It also calls for pushing back against the ideology and propaganda violent extremists wield to lure people to their cause. These factors are complex, contextual, and often only apparent at the community level. As such, they are often beyond the means of national governments alone to address. CVE therefore calls for a much broader set of actors to address these factors through whole-of-society approaches that include local officials, businesses, religious leaders, researchers, women, youth, and even former members of extremist groups. Through this more preventative and holistic approach, CVE seeks to tighten the flow of recruits to the current generation of violent extremist groups while better preventing the next generation of threat. Countering violent extremism is therefore an essential complement to military efforts to defeat the Islamic State. This is not a question of either or, said Undersecretary of State Sewell. This complex and generational threat requires both.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports news, Zimbabweans are mourning the death of Ebo Shado Sevele, who died a few days ago in California here in the United States. Sevele, who came to the United States under a football scholarship and played for Virginia Tech College, Wichita Soccer Club, and San Diego Soccers, died in a suspected car accident. One of his relatives, Priscilla Ndlovu, tells Studio 7 a memorial service will be held this Sunday for the late player in Virginia.
Currently, we are working on arranging for a memorial service that is going to be held at his high school in Virginia and Alexandria. I have already posted the address where this is going to happen, and I encourage as many Zimbabweans in the D.C. metropolitan area to support us in attending this memorial service. I will also send you the website where people can keep updates. Otherwise, at the moment, that's where we are. We are still making the necessary arrangements.
When is the memorial service?
The memorial service is on Sunday at 2 p.m.
What are the indications concerning his death? What are you hearing right now?
I don't have the details. The details are still not clear to us because there are still investigations and we don't want to say a lot in terms of what has happened without full information. At the moment, I'll just advise people that their investigations are going on, and once the investigators are done with the investigation, they will let us know.
That was a relative of Zimbabwean-born soccer player Abel Shado Sevele, who died last Friday in the United States. And now for a quick recap of today's top stories. A ZANU-PF member of parliament has appeared in court facing rape charges in a landmark private prosecution case. Many Zimbabweans say they are failing to raise money to send children to school, which open tomorrow. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungameli Nkomo. All yours.